Welcome to Magic the Blathering. I am Jesse Mason. And here we have Chris Masioli.
Hi. I'm
John Corpora.
Hi.
So, what topic are we starting this week? Oh, right. So, as most people already know, there is this app on Facebook where you can make your fantasy predictions. And I haven't done it yet because I'm waiting to hear what people say before I actually do it. But it's just predicting the next Pro Tour. So, how does the scoring work again?
The scoring works that you get points based on how many of a card is in a top-performing deck.
And have they defined top-performing deck?
Yeah, it's in BDM's article. I think it's any deck with a positive record.
Oh, okay. So, we were kind of debating this before, and the biggest one, I guess, was just what Planeswalker do we think will do the best, and Chris, you had opinions.
Yeah, I'm the only one qualified for this Pro Tour, by the way. Just pointing that out. Off Planeswalker points, but we'll talk about that later. My Planeswalker was Garruk Primal Hunter.
Whereas, I like that one. I think that's a good one, but that's not the one I went with.
John picked...
I picked Sorin.
And Jesse wanted to pick...
I would pick Sorin.
And I think you guys are just wrong, because Sorin's not very good. And I don't think a tokens deck is going to do very well. Whereas the mono green deck is very good and plays at least two copies of this card. So I think this will show up more.
So the reason that I think Sorin will get more play than Garruk Primal Hunter, first of all, it's such an obvious deck that tons and tons of people are going to try it, regardless of whether it ends up being good and regardless of whether Chris is actually right here. I think that a lot of people are going to come out with their Flores design four-color Sorin or whatever and go 3-2 or something, or 7-6 or whatever. And, yeah, so just more people are going to try it because it's the first time that they can. Whereas Garruk, people are kind of over that. Also, if you're playing green, then you at least have the opportunity to play some of the other Garruk.
This one's much better. You play like a 2-1 split. That's what I'm doing.
Right, so that seems like it'll definitely keep down the numbers. So even if you have half as many Sorin decks, if the decks with Garruk Primal Hunter in them only play one or two, like, it's not going to win you the contest.
Fair enough. What do you think for large creature? I picked Primeval Titan, and
yeah,
I don't think
Prime Time's far and away.
Okay, next seems is obvious. Medium creature. I picked Hero of Bladehold.
I probably should have picked Hero, but I went with Glissa.
That's just Gliss wrong.
Gliss is terrible.
Yeah, but why?
Because no one will ever play more than one or two. Because
it has a mana cost that is uncastable.
It's Green Sun's Xenothable, to be fair.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, no one's casting this card.
But if it's Green Sun's Xenothable, then you're not going to be playing more than one.
Yeah, I have it as a one of in my sideboard.
Right, and Hero, I'm not sure exactly what other creatures count as medium, so yeah, Hero seems way better than that.
It's anything that costs 3 to 4.
Right.
Like,
so
yeah, I'm pretty sure that Gliss is wrong, but I like it. I just
small
like
creature
Gliss because I think a Gliss deck has a higher ceiling than a Hero Bladehold deck in this Pro Tour.
I think Humans is the best deck, and it's not close.
Well, it's the best deck. It's going to be gunned for. Like,
yeah,
people,
but I mean,
it's a known quantity.
It's still going to perform very well. So what about small creature? I think Champion of the Parish.
That is wrong as shit.
Snapcaster, because everyone will be playing Snapcaster.
Yeah, it's the most powerful one. Like, it's not even close.
Like, people are going to play 4 Snapcasters in control and aggro and everything in between. Whereas Champion, it'll just see play in Humans.
And I think that will be enough to have it more played than Snapcaster Mage.
And I am willing to put money on you being wrong there.
No, I'm not going to take any money bets. Okay, instance. Everyone put Mana Leak, right?
I put Mana Leak.
Seems fine.
Some kid I know put Midnight Haunting, but I don't think that's right.
Sorcery is definitely Lingering Souls.
Yeah.
I put Faithless Looting.
Yeah, that's
stupid.
Yeah, that's just wrong.
All right.
Like, a million more decks are going to play Lingering Souls than Faithless Looting. Honor of the Pure for enchantments.
Yeah.
I put O-Ring, but I'm pretty sure it's actually Honor.
Sword of War and Keys for artifacts.
I put Ratchet Bomb.
Ratchet Bomb.
I don't know. I think Sword is going to be played way more. And non-basic land is Seachrom Coast.
Evolving Wilds. But not Seachrom Coast.
I'm not sure on this one. I think I might go Evolving Wilds just for all the three or four color brews that people throw together the night before. But I'll have to look into that more.
Or the white-black tokens deck has to play it too, since they only have one dual end.
Right.
Yeah.
And Pro Tour player for the tiebreaker, I put Lewis Scott Vargas.
Yeah, me too.
Just because there's no one else as consistent.
Yeah.
I think his median finish over the last, like, five Pro Tours is actually, like, in the top 16.
That's insane.
Can you put together some sort of hack-together database with Pro Tour players' win percentages? Because that would be so useful.
If someone wants to code a data collection that can go through each round and give me the winners, then yeah,
On the other hand, what are you doing with your life other than coding that? So get on it.
There's no money in it.
There's no money in your life right now.
Yeah, but I find things to do that are enjoyable.
This is harsh. You got real harsh.
I'm sorry, Chris.
Yeah, fuck you.
There's no money in your life.
I'm going to win the Pro Tour.
That's who I picked as my
Strangle Root. You can't even pick me. I wanted to pick me just for vanity, take a screenshot, and pick back to LSD, but it wouldn't even let me pick myself.
I have a picture of Eeyore with a stuffed penguin in the background as an Pro Tour player tiebreaker, but it doesn't have a name. I think they just forgot your name, honestly.
Someone told me that they never thought they would hear an interview between Don Draper and Eeyore in reference to the interview I did with Medina last week.
Don Draper?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. I want to find whoever said that and punch him in the face. Don Draper? Medina? Does that person watch Mad Men?
I don't know. I've never watched Mad Men, so I don't know.
Who do you think is a more appropriate fit for Medina then?
Stifler? I don't know.
Do you watch White Collar?
No.
Oh, damn it.
I got Job
from Arrested Development, maybe? I don't know.
I got pretty wrecked in that interview because Medina's like the cool guy at parties because he's part of the MTG frat house, and I'm like the kid who sits in the corner and gives people angry looks from time to time.
Oh, he could be Prez Belusky from The Wire.
I've never seen that show either.
Yeah, me neither. I feel bad about missing that show, though.
What?
Yeah, me too.
Okay.
Sorry.
This one, I really don't know. Just as white people, I'm not sure that you can really hold on to your culture without having watched every season of The Wire.
All right.
I'll have to give it a time in all the free time I have.
Whoops.
Why don't you just start watching it after round five of the Pro Tour?
You mean round eight? I'm playing the free draft. I'm 1-for-2 in day two in Pro Tours, so I'm not that bad.
And you got an awesome promo card that other time.
Yeah, I did. That card's awesome. My 1-5.
Foil Korean.
Yeah, foil Japanese. Foil signed by the artist who just happened to be on the site.
So I'm more wondering about, was it Lax that did that?
Yeah, Ari did it.
How many chaff foil Japanese cards does he have just taking around from tournament?
None. He brought that specifically to give it to someone who went 1-5. And it just happened that the artist was there to sign it.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
I remember Ari came up to me with the biggest shit-eating grin on his face, like, possible. And he's like, Chris, I have something for you. I'm like, I'm kind of depressed. I'm 1-5 at the Pro Tour. He's like, Chris, I have something for you. It's a card. It's foil. I'm like, sure, whatever. Give it to me. And he hands me the 1-5 and, like, walks away laughing.
What was his record?
It was, like, a 15-year-old girl, like, when they give you, like, I have a crush on you card, and then walk away before you can, like, look at it.
Has that happened to you?
No.
Oh.
But I saw it happen to other people when I was in high school, so I figured that's what it's like.
That is one of the Chris Masioli-est things that I've heard lately.
Wait, so what was Ari's record when he handed that to
you? Ari was X2, and I think he finished it at X3.
Oh.
So he debuted.
Okay, so, Pro Tour, yay.
Yep.
But
yay.
I have a story about Ari Lax that I've heard from Brian Cook about 1,000 times.
Like, let's hear it.
Do we know who Brian Cook is?
No,
but
plays a shitload of Legacy. He top aided Grand Prix Columbus. He plays Storm a lot. Like,
okay.
He's the other Storm guy in Legacy. And him and Ari are playing for top eight. And Bryant grape shots him out. Because, like, you can either tendril someone out or you can grape shot them if you're, like, feeling really vindictive, and that's like what Bryant does to people because he's kind of an asshole. So, like, yeah, Adam and I know him. Like, he plays around Syracuse, and he grape shots Ari Lax out of top eight contention at Grand Prix Columbus.
Ari must have been pleased.
Yeah, Ari was just like real cute as he like packed in his cards and shit, or so I've been told.
Well, that story added absolutely nothing, so thank you for telling it.
No problem.
It would really suck to be the other Legacy Storm person.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, you're the guy known for playing some okay Legacy deck, but you can't even be the best at playing your okay Legacy deck in a format that has 50 different okay decks.
Imagine being, like, the other guy who writes about FNM other than John.
Ooh.
I was the other guy who wrote about FNM for, like, a second, and then Kyle Sanchez stopped. Thank God.
But Flores is still writing.
Does Flores play Magic, though? Like, Paper
Magic?
Not
sure. I think that he might have stumbled upon my scheme of not playing Magic and writing about it.
Yeah, it wasn't the other way around.
Except he makes, like, a million times what you make.
It's
for
true. Everything that I say about writers is out of jealousy. This goes for Flores or Medina or anyone, really. I just wish that I could write that well and make that much money.
Is that why you're going to make fun of my? Is that why you're going to make fun of my article later?
Oh, absolutely.
Out of pure jealousy.
Oh,
okay.
So jealous.
Next topic, Jesse. Since you're our host.
Oh shit. Next topic. Right. since we already did what makes a bad article, how about what makes a good or bad local game store? And let's go to John first for this one, because he's talked a bit about the good and the bad of local game stores in his FNM articles.
What makes a good game store is, like, how close you are to, like, a keg of alcohol, because there is a shop in Johnson City in New York called Jupiter Games, and they have, like, they have big NELC qualifiers. I don't know what the acronym stands for, but they're, like, big cash legacy tournaments, and right down the street is a bar. And it's awesome because, like, right around their – because they have a lunch break, and their lunch break is right around happy hour. So, yeah, it works out really well.
Okay, so most important thing for what makes a local game store, alcohol availability.
Right.
Did you see the event that what's his name on Twitter linked us to in Britain where you just drink two drinks every round?
Oh yeah. Wow. That's Dan Barrett.
Yeah, that event seemed awesome.
Yeah, that seemed real sweet. I'd throw up, but I'd love it.
Okay, so there's step one to making a good store. Find it close to a bar.
Okay.
My LGS is across the street from two bars, so we're fitting in perfectly so far.
So don't you think that non-American people have a real advantage here by playing FNM in bars or pubs?
Yeah, because they don't have stores.
Yeah. But that also disqualifies them from having a good local game store, so we're even.
Fair enough.
So... John, do you have any experience with bad local game stores?
Usually it's because they're either, like, not spacious enough or, I don't know. There's one LGS that I'm around, and I'm not going to say their name, but, like, they don't bother to keep their prices competitive, and they don't have, like, a buy list or anything, and so you can't really trade with them, and, like, last I checked, Tezzeret Agent of Bolas was like $70 there, or $50, or something crazy like that. Like, and that's just kind of like a taster of their prices. Like, they have Goyfs at 120. Like, they kind of just, like, put their, like, their price guide, I think, is just kind of take every card ceiling and add $20 to that. So, like, and I'm talking, like, absolute ceiling. Like,
at least you can never lose money.
Sure, but you're not getting money either. You're, like, you're mostly wasting space because they have a display case, but then people ask, how much is this card? And they're like, oh, well, that Tarmogoyf is 120. And people are just like, oh, fuck that.
Yeah, how about
so
the,
that does not help.
So how about, like, the makeup of who goes to a store? Like, would you prefer, or not prefer, but they're the stores that are nearly all casual players or nearly all super hyper-competitive guys? Like, what do you think makes for the most fun atmosphere for someone showing up out of the blue?
Oh, definitely all casual players. Like,
my story,
I don't know. People are different. Like, there are some sharks that are nice people, and there are some casual players that are dicks. But if I'm generalizing, most of the time, like, the people that are kind of top tier at the store are dicks. And so you want as many people that don't take the game seriously as possible in order to have the most fun.
My story went from super hyper competitive to very casual, and very casual is much better.
Yeah.
See, but I...
And I'm super hyper competitive myself. In fact, the first time I met John was playing him at a match at some terrible PTQ, and he was really mean to me because I was being a dick.
Me? I don't even remember what happened that match. I just remember, like, trying to get you to talk.
I don't like talking. I don't like people.
Yeah. Wait, what happened? You were being a dick? I believe it, but,
yeah.
Like, what happened? I don't remember.
I wasn't saying any. I wasn't talking, and you just kept trying to be nice. You're like, don't you ever talk during matches? And I'm like, no. Don't you want to have fun? No.
Oh.
And then he quickly crushed me with his, like, ridiculous stuff.
My first time meeting Chris was at a dinner, and then after the dinner, I forgot that Chris was there.
Sounds about right.
I'm very memorable. It was a dinner with AJ Soccer, so obviously my presence would not be noted.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair, afterward, like, once I was reminded, I was like, oh yeah, that guy, I remember him being there, but he was the one that wasn't AJ, so he wasn't talking.
Gavin was there too, and he wasn't talking either.
He was talking a little bit, and his girlfriend, who is the nicest person, wasn't talking at all.
Whoa,
anyway,
wait, Gavin brought his girlfriend.
Someone just said the word girlfriend.
Oh,
shot
sorry.
Has,
hey,
shot
no, no,
taken.
This is someone else's girlfriend, not John's girlfriend.
Oh, right.
So,
wait, so
anyway,
his girlfriend to a tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How does that work?
I would never bring my girlfriend. Let me preface this by, this is a hypothetical situation. I would never bring a girlfriend to a tournament.
Never.
Never.
Not even to distract your opponent.
No.
I would totally do that.
And you have done it, apparently.
What?
Have you done that?
No.
You wrote about it in your article.
It was fiction.
That was
I've
fiction.
I've never even dated anyone named Julia.
I don't know. We don't know this. We don't have the personal biography of the greatest magic writer to ever live, Jesse Mason.
Okay, first of all, the article is about, like, me trying to cheat in a game of magic, which I never did. And basically nothing in it happened. I thought that it was pretty obvious, like, that it was a fictional setup, but okay.
That's not!
Yeah, so we're way off topic now. Anyway, the only reason that my articles on Gathering Magic aren't labeled fiction is, and no disrespect to my editor here, but he does not know how to change a header to say fiction.
A header?
Like the little, you know, the little thing that says tournament report or theory or missile or other.
Oh, okay.
Mine said editorial.
Right. So, yeah. Sorry to get to spill his secret out there, but yeah. Anyway, so one of the reasons that I bring up the good or bad local game store is that I went to a new
to me, a local game store for the first time last night. And it's just kind of a strange experience going to a store where you don't know anyone and have to kind of learn on the fly who is the really loud new player and who is the good player, et cetera, et cetera.
What was your role in the store?
I'm sorry?
What's your role?
Asshole.
Okay. Just checking.
Okay.
What's my role?
God, you can't not talk about yourself. We're not going to answer that question. You don't have a role. Okay. Keep going, Jesse.
Yeah. So it was a good store, especially, you know, good turnout on a Tuesday. But it reminded me of game store that I used to play at in Virginia, the one that was co-owned by Mike Long. And basically everyone there was kind of a dick.
Is that the one he stole the money from and ran away?
Right. But again, yeah, that's a story that I don't know the full, I don't know the full story there. So yeah, but it just seems really tough to build a local community at a store where the players are just not terrible people.
You think it's hard?
Yes.
I think that's
when
really
not
easy.
Terrible
like,
people?
Because, okay, so where I play FNMs every week is a place called Cloud City. One of the people that was kind of like sick of our LGS kind of broke off, and because Cloud City was originally a comic book store, and it was just comic books. And then this guy, Aaron, kind of like bought into Cloud City a little bit and was like, hey, we can do magic out of here too. And so they started doing that. And Aaron knows all these like-minded players who are new, but they like kind of have a passion to learn and get better. So he organizes car drives to Grand Prix and like PTQs and all this shit. And yeah, I mean, like Chris, at that PTQ, did you see those guys in the blue shirts that said Team Cloud City on?
Yeah, they weren't very good.
Right. Like, yeah, like, I looked at one of their sealed pools they showed me, and like, one of them had, like, Heretic's Punishment and Devil's Play sitting in his sideboard. He was like...
I played one of them. It was one of my few wins at that PTQ.
Yeah. And, like, he had Devil's Play and Heretic's Punishment sitting in his sideboard, and he was, like, Esper. He was, like, a three-color mess. But like,
was one of their girlfriends wearing the shirt too?
Because
I think I played her too, and she complained about how unlucky she got.
I don't remember.
Oh,
a
so
girl
you just
did top eight
that girl there
though.
Has to be a girlfriend, huh?
No, it was a player's boyfriend. I'm 100% sure of that because the boyfriend came and watched the match after.
Oh, okay.
A girl top eight at that PTQ.
Yeah, she's really good. God, I can't remember her name right now. Jill Costigan. She's really good.
Yeah.
She's like really old school and really good.
Huh. I mean, I just outed myself as being sexist by saying that a girl top eight of that PTQ with a tone of disbelief, but yeah. yeah, that happened. And I got paired in the semifinals against the dude that eventually won the whole thing. He's like, yeah, it's the best deck I've ever drafted. And meanwhile, I've got a fucking pile. Like, I've got the worst deck I've ever drafted. It was like my first time drafting the set ever, and it was in the fucking top eight of a Pro Tour qualifier. It was pretty sweet.
So, kind of on the fly topic change here, do you think it's a bad thing for Magic that, and I know that I do it too, we immediately see a girl at some Magic tournament and go, wow, I wonder whose girlfriend she is. Like,
I mean, if we read Darwin's Castle article, we hope to get paired against the boyfriend, beat them, and then take the girl home with us.
As a trophy,
obviously. You
want to
take that girl home with you? She has a website.
Okay, no. Cut that out here. No. Stay on the auto ray.
Oh. Yeah.
So, anyway, basically, like, how do you think it's possible that at some point in the future, competitive Magic is not 98% male.
No.
I hope so, but I don't
see
it.
I would hope so, but it's not going to happen.
So why do you think it is?
Because it's like...
Because women are less likely to be autistic? I don't know. I'm serious. Like, you have to fucking be autistic to want to play this game as much as I do, at least.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm just stone cold retarded. Forget autistic.
Sure. I'll take it.
Sorry, that's ableist, but whatever. Anyway, no, I don't think it's going to happen. First of all, between any female's first foray into a local game shop has to be the worst feeling in the world.
Oh, yeah,
I remember on Twitter, a new girl showed up to someone's game shop, and someone was live tweeting what the girl was doing each round.
That was also Dan Barrett.
I remember that.
I think I helped spur that on, though, so I'm fully to blame as well.
I really like Dan Barrett, but I told him to cut that shit out, because that was embarrassing. But
I don't know.
So my personal hypothesis about this is basically the reason that more women don't play Magic is that the current Magic community is basically guys that don't hang out with girls ever.
I mean, I don't think that's fully true. Granted, the one girl who occasionally shows up to my FNM gets hit on by the same three people every time.
Yeah, and that's an issue too. But like, I think that the main reason that more girls don't play Magic, like if guys that played Magic were just less awkward at becoming friends with girls, then they would play Magic.
Well, it's interesting because I feel like the better of a Magic player you are, the more likely you are to talk to girls. Like, I can't speak to every I can't speak to every like top tier players at every LGS, but like it feels like the top tier players at my LGS, like they all kind of like they either live with their girlfriends or are in a committed relationship or some shit like
shots.
No, we're calling off the shots for this one, but it is something I've noticed too, is that and casual players cover your ears. The more casual the player are, is the more the higher chance they are of seeming super awkward and laughing at their own jokes and shit.
The worse someone is at Magic, the more likely they are to be stereotypical nerd.
Right. It's true.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, when I sit down across the table from someone and they have a die bag, I put myself at like an 80% favorite to win just because they have that dice, that bag of dice.
God, I wanted to sit across from you with a die bag.
I mean, you probably did.
You're a die bag.
I didn't have a die bag. I had a box. It got lost at that PTQ.
Called you, yourself, you as a person, a die bag.
I mean, I hope.
That's solid, sir.
Well, I'm a bag. I would like to be a bag of death.
But
yeah, like if you sit across the table from someone and they're like super stereotypical nerd, like I'm kind of happy to sit across the table from that person because they're usually just not good.
Right.
The more normal someone looks, like
the better they are.
The scared I am.
And that's the weird thing about Magic cards.
Yeah. So and if I sit across the table from a guy that's moderately good looking, then I am definitely not a favorite to win. And proof of this is Brian Kibler.
PVDDR.
Oh, yeah. Tom Ma.
Tom Ma, so cute.
Who is he?
Tom Ma's the best. He top 8ed on Pro Tour Amsterdam.
Okay.
So I'm sorry for anyone listening to this that doesn't get our insane series of fin jokes, but Tom Ma is actually, before I moved from Denver, we used to PTQ together. And he would loan me cards, and he was the nicest person in the world when I knew him. And then, as soon as I moved away, he won the next PTQ and top-8ed the Pro Tour that it qualified him for.
Then he threw away his rating that queued him for Worlds at a Star City Open and slept through day 2 of GP Paris.
Oops. That sounds pretty sweet.
But he's adorable.
You can't hate a guy that does that.
Well, Tom Ma gives me faith in the future of competitive Magic because it shows that you can be the nicest person in the world and still get good enough at a game to win tournaments.
Fair enough. What's the next topic?
What about if you're really mean? Like Adam Barnell.
Like me? He's a
mean guy. Can he win?
No.
Well, right. He's as high as cards in his beard.
Only if he plays Lava Spike. Ooh,
That's a hell of a segue.
How much of a joke is Legacy when Burn wins 2 weeks in a row?
Yeah, it's a pretty big joke.
All right. It's really kind of awkward that Adam's not here, but he has held the position for a long time that, like, all the legacy tournaments that aren't in the Northeast are just very soft. Like, they just kind of don't really know what the format is outside of top 16 lists. And they don't understand the format much.
Do you think with the new Star City levels, the Star City Opens are weaker than they were?
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's not even a question. Of course they are.
Because there's no incentive to travel to them anymore. Like, you don't get free entry for being a high level.
Right.
So that's like, just basic human behavior.
Yeah. There's no more appearance fees, so the Star City's got a lot worse.
Yeah, no one is grinding those tournaments anymore. I feel like a good player might show up if it's convenient, but
right.
No one's grinding.
So, and I'm saying this as someone, I don't follow Legacy that closely, so if this is wildly off, I apologize. But if you told me that there was a format that was super popular at least partially due to high prizes, good prize support, and appearance fees at a series, and that all went away, I would say, oh, well, then you'll see more decks getting played. You won't see the same players top eight as much. The decks will get less tuned, and so it'll look like there's a wider variety of available decks, when really the problem is just not many people are tuning the good decks.
Yeah, I think Wizards' fear last season that formats were evolving too quickly is going to be gone because the SCG Opens no longer features good players. Like, did Jerry even go to either of the past two?
I don't know. I do know that he is making Stasis for the next Open, and that's fucking
sweet. I saw the beta Stasis on Twitter.
Oh my god, I can't wait. And he's keeping him mono blue. Oh, I played that deck like before they printed Chain of Vapor.
Are you gonna jerk her off before or after he plays it?
Both. But yeah, I definitely played that deck before Chain of Vapor. Like, I had to play Rescue, and deck was fucking sweet. Damage went on the stack, and Morphling was my win condition. So like, that guy was pretty much unbeatable. Yeah, those were the days. God damn it.
Did it have uphill in the snow both ways walk?
Morphling?
Yeah.
I hate you, Chris. I mean, Jesse. I get you two mixed up. You guys both sound very white.
We sound very what?
White.
Oh, that's true.
You guys enunciate very well.
Really?
Yeah, it's really gay.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry for being born in such a privileged class.
Yeah.
I deeply apologize.
And I'm sorry for having done debate in high school.
I did debate in high school too.
Were you any good?
I did the research and stuff. I didn't actually argue because I can't. I'm not very good at speaking.
Boring.
Sorry. Sorry. Some of us are socially awkward and shy and nervous and have all sorts of problems.
You act like I wasn't that in high school. Also.
Ooh, you act like you're so cool now, Jesse, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm really not.
So smooth.
But I've gotten better.
It gets better.
It gets
That's
better,
all
Chris.
Just need to be told.
I mean, when my penguins were playtesting, they had to hide the "No Girls Allowed" sign that was hanging at my door.
Of course they did. Jesus Christ.
That's... By the way, at the next tournament where we're both attending, I want to get a picture of you playtesting against the stuffed animal with every chair around you empty.
Okay. Rich Hagen asked me to bring a penguin to Pro Tour Honolulu, so I don't know what's going to happen. I'm kind of scared.
You're going to bring a penguin to Pro Tour Honolulu.
That's how I'm framing my Pro Tour reports.
And he's his penguin, and everyone's going to hate it. That's what's going to happen. Spoiler alert.
I got the most blog hits ever on that blog post.
Which
That's
one?
Awful.
The penguins.
Oh.
Because Evan Irwin retweeted it.
Yeah, Irwin does that.
I was excited that people got to see my penguins.
By the way, I would like to mourn the loss of Adam Barnello and especially Justin from this podcast, who we learn now kept us on topic.
Yeah.
So,
what topic were we discussing?
Yeah, we were supposed to be talking about Legacy. Anyway, I think that
the changes to Star City Games prize support and the changes to the Legacy format really show how important the Star City Game Open Series was to both Standard and Legacy.
I think it's way more important to Legacy, just because Standard at least has Moto still.
Yeah. Right.
There's not as much incentive to constantly tune. And my opinion on this is I don't think that a deck like Cawblade is ever going to happen again just because the Star City Game Open doesn't exist. And what I mean is that we had...
It doesn't exist like it did in its original form.
Right, right, right. Well, it doesn't exist like it did, sure. So what we had was a really large sample size where people could tune a couple cards week to week and really get good at one deck and be rewarded for it. And so I think that in the future there will be formats that, if they were tested that much, would come down to one deck. But because they don't get that much examination, it'll look like they're really wide open and fun.
Yeah, agreed. Star City fucked up pretty badly, in my opinion.
Right. So, but...
Well, they were probably under a lot of pressure from Wizards, because it was like... At one point, it was like making more sense for like people like AJ to just like go to an Open instead of a Grand Prix.
I mean, but that's why Wizards made infinite Grand Prix this year, so they can compete.
But there's another side to that, which is that there have probably been some really fun Standard formats that we've all loved that, if Star City Game Open had been around, would have been solved and really boring. So maybe what I'm saying is maybe the Open series actually made Standard less fun.
It's possible. It made Standard more competitive, for sure.
Right.
And I like things that are competitive.
But there's a difference between competitive, where you can play one of 10 different decks, and competitive, where there's one deck.
Like, my original plan for this year was to travel to Star Cities with Alex Bernstein, and that plan went away for multiple reasons.
Wait, so I actually hate wide open formats, just because those are the formats where, like, linears are usually really, really good. Like,
Burn.
So what's like the best deck in Modern right now? It's got to be Affinity, right?
In Modern, it's between Affinity and Maliria Pod.
Right. And
just because Maliria Pod beats Cawblade.
Right. And I don't think it's Maliria Pod post Grafdigger's Cage.
I mean, people, how do you afford to play that card?
Grafdigger's Cage?
Yeah, I don't think that card's very good.
Okay. It beats Maliria, though.
Not necessarily. Like, I mean, they do run cards that kill artifacts. Like, they just... If that card starts becoming popular, they just run Viridian Zealots. And in response to you casting Cage, they go Court of Calling Viridian Zealots.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got Cage, you've got Torpor Orb. I mean, you're not just going to play a Cage and then sit on your thumb.
Yeah, but I mean, it doesn't single-handedly beat it. Like, the best deck in Modern changes every week, so it'll be different next week.
I don't think
John,
it does.
John, what were you saying more generally about formats you liked or didn't like?
They're a little more narrowed down. Like, they're a little less wide open. They don't favor linears so much.
So why, you don't like playing against linear strategies?
Right. Do you?
Huh. Well, I play elves, so
that's your answer. Well, Eternal, like, okay, so Legacy and Vintage, I'm not counting as formats.
Sure.
Sorry, Adam Farnello, but I'm not. And because, like, their linears are kind of held in check by infinite hate cards. Right? Like, Dredge and Affinity are pretty much held in check by...
To be fair, two linear strategies were in the finals of the SCG Open this weekend, in Affinity and Burn.
Burn as a linear strategy, but that's kind of a definition thing, so continue, John.
Oh, I forgot where I was going, because Chris interrupted. I don't think I was going anywhere. I just, like... I didn't mind Cawblade so much back in its heyday.
Yeah,
I mind things like Valakut more. Like...
Why?
But isn't Valakut a linear strategy?
Because there were plenty
strategy?
Of mid-range decks that could have crushed Cawblade, but they couldn't exist because of Valakut.
Oh, I see. So... I guess I'm the opposite in that the reason that I started playing elves in the first place was that I really love combo decks, and I like formats where combo decks, or at least decks that act like combo decks, can exist. And decks that just throw good cards together, those seem really boring to me.
I like formats where there's three good decks and you can play any of those three decks and be okay. I don't like formats like Modern because any format that's too wide open becomes too heavily dependent on getting good pairings or not. Like, whenever you build your deck, you pick a section of the spectrum to be good against, and you hope that people are playing that spectrum, so getting good matchups matters a lot.
Then you can just choose a deck that does something powerful against every deck.
Yeah, yeah, but like that's kind of Legacy to a T.
Then you can get hated out sometimes, though. Like,
sure.
Affinity, if your opponent's playing like Ancient Grudge and like Creeping Corrosion, you're not in good shape.
Or even Energy Flux, I guess, really. Like, I'm naming the bad cards against them.
I like formats where it's basically rock, paper, scissors, but you can improve your rock, scissors match by knowing what you're doing against them. Like, my favorite format recently was when Jund, Mythic, and Turbo Lamp were the three best decks in Type 2.
Ugh. So, I think I'm one of the few people that really loves taking a linear strategy and playing against hate. That is so much fun to me.
I like it, too.
Where you have to, where it's your hate card.
I've done it a long time.
What?
I like it, too, but it's been a long time since I've done that. Like we're talking Tooth and Nail and Standard.
For example, or like playing Storm and they have their anti-storm cards, and then you sideboard against that, or you're playing a graveyard deck and they have anti-graveyard cards, and then you have some weird transformative sideboards. Because, let's be clear, transformative sideboards are probably the coolest thing that can happen in Magic, period.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So but, I played Tooth and Nail and Standard back in like 2004, 2005, and they printed, not Splinter, what was it, Sowing Salt, where it was like destroy a land and...
It reprinted Sowing Salt, but yeah, you went through the controller's library and took all copies.
Yeah, so that kind of gutted Tron. So like, you boarded into Troll Ascetics and Iwamori of the Open Fist, and it was fucking sweet.
And so speaking of Legacy, not that I'm sure that his main deck was good, and not that I'm sure that the sideboard was any good, but Drew Levin had a dredge list where the sideboard was just 15 cards that transformed the deck solely against Grafdigger's Cage. And I thought that that was the most awesome thing that I had seen in a deck list in a very long time.
You guys are just too excited over stupid things.
Sorry.
But the idea
I really like that Burn won 2 weeks in a row, by the way. Like, I know Adam Barnello hates it, from judging from his article today. But, like, I love it. Because, A, I like Schadenfreude. And, B, because I think, like, you can't just fucking dirtle around and do nothing. Like, I think having to win or, like, establish a soft lock in four turns is a good thing for a format. And if you just dick around, you lose.
I hope Counterbalance becomes good again, because I really like Counterbalance.
I hope Stasis becomes a real deck, because that card has the best art ever.
Isn't it not even, like, a real artist? Didn't, like, one of the designers, like, wife or kids
no,
do it?
No, you're exactly wrong. That is one of the few Magic cards that was done by a professional graphic artist that did, like, non-fantasy stuff.
That's why it's fucked up. That's why
right.
It's terrible.
Really?
That is an art piece by a serious artist.
I heard that it was by someone's like wife or kid.
It was by a wife, but she was a serious artist.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I just knew it was by a wife. They didn't mention that part in the story.
Yeah, well, Stasis is one of the few examples of like impressionistic avant-garde art being used in a Magic card, and so nearly every Magic player hates it.
I like it a lot.
Yeah, me too.
But I'm an art snob, so it's okay.
Did either of you guys see that?
What?
I altered a Stasis once.
Wow, congratulations, John.
Yeah.
Look who's talking about themselves now.
Sorry.
Is it both of you?
Speaking about talking about themselves, John wanted to make fun of my article.
Oh, yeah, I did.
So, topic change, by the way. Since we don't have we don't have responsible adults here, so...
Yeah, we're just children.
We're kind of just...
Right,
just children being children.
I wanted to talk about the worst article of the last few weeks, and unfortunately this time it was by Chris Mascioli. So anyone that hasn't read it yet, just go on Gathering Magic and look at this piece of shit and wince as you scroll down it.
It's called chasing Kate.
Yeah. It is like being beat over the head with...
Because he phoned in writing it.
I did not phone in writing it.
Yeah. Really?
It's like being beaten over the head with an Eeyore-shaped sledgehammer.
I don't think... Whatever. Say your critiques, and then I'll respond.
Okay, so my critique of this article is that subtlety curls up and dies in the face of it. There is no message in this article that Chris Masioli does not specifically tell you is the end message. He tells you that you are supposed to feel sad and that you are sad, and therefore you should feel sad. And it is just the most over-the-top, like, whiny piece of shit. And I'm sorry, Chris, but you have to, like, hint at things. You have to write around things. You have to... right, instead of just telling people what they are supposed to come away with.
I don't see where I told people what they were supposed to come away with.
You say specifically at the end, in case if you're reading this.
You didn't like my P.S.?
I did not.
How about if without the P.S.?
Then it's still a piece of shit, because there's still, like, there's nothing underneath the surface there.
I mean... When I write a literal calendar date followed by what events and followed by what I did.
Yeah, I mean, and I scrolled past.
There's not supposed to be anything under the surface.
Well, then you intended to write a shitty article.
I don't think it's shitty, though.
Oh, disagree. John?
I mean, yeah, you kind of covered it. I don't really know what else to say. Like, you really didn't... This was like an effort...
Yeah, this was a lot of effort.
Yeah, I will never question Chris's effort when it comes to writing something long form.
But, like, it's not long form. He, like, the second half is just dates and blurbs. Like, I could shit this. Like, you know?
I carefully selected my blurbs.
Okay, oh, Chris, boy. If you... When you're trying to make a narrative piece... Your piece should have... You should probably end up with a narrative.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Don't mean to gang pile, but like... Jesus Christ. That... I hated reading that. I was like, oh, really? We're going into this? You fucking dildo. Like, just keep it consistent. Because, like, I don't want to read this. And think of a better title than Chasing Kate.
I could taste the self-pity.
But I want it, like, I didn't write the piece to necessarily be good, even though I kind of, like, stop. I liked the end product, but I wrote it as a personal, like, self-catharsis. Like, I didn't get paid for that piece.
Okay, here's the thing about self-catharsis. Other people aren't supposed to read it.
I wanted other people to read it, though.
Then it's not self-catharsis. Ugh.
I wrote it for cathartic reasons.
Okay.
I wanted to share my agony with the greatest audience possible.
And I'm saying that your authorial intent does not matter because it ended up in a piece that was not readable.
I mean, I think it was readable. I liked the way it ended up.
I'll leave you the same way I was left. With a song.
A song! Can we play the song?
No. Oh, God, no. Stop it.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not really sure where we're supposed to go from that after we both tell Chris about that, so...
I still think it was good.
And you're wrong.
I think I'm right.
Okay. We were going to do... a non-magic related thing, but I think it's funnier just to end with us piling on you right now, because we've been over an hour already.
Have we really?
We have.
We haven't, but whatever.
Oh.
No, we definitely have not.
Since the call. Chris, remember to edit this shit out.
No way! Not after you just piled on me, now you're going to look like an idiot too.
Okay, fine. So vengeful. So our final topic and the non-magic related one is bad movies we have seen recently.
I saw The Room. Have either of you seen The Room?
No.
No.
Oh, well, this isn't going to play then, but
But that was, like, a movie famous for being bad. I was talking about, like, things that we've seen hoping that they weren't bad, but were quite bad.
Okay, I saw J. Edgar. I saw J. Edgar, and that movie was shit.
That movie was terrible.
Really? Yeah. Oh, I had high hopes. What was wrong with it?
Everything.
Like, it was like the Chris Mess. It was like the Chasing Kate of FBI docudrama movies.
My article was good. I don't understand why you people don't like it.
No, but it was not, like, not subtle at all. There was no subtlety in it. And
there's not always need for subtlety.
Yeah, I mean, if you're trying to be crappy, then yeah. I mean, there is no use for subtlety. You just instead of tell, and that's fine if you're just trying to be shit. But no, J. Edgar was real garbage. Like, the foreshadowing was really heavy-handed. I mean, you could tell right away that J. Edgar was going to be gay, and that's how they do it, and they end on a sentiment of ad hominem attacks are bad. Meanwhile, the director is focusing so much on the fact that, like, this guy led a double life, which is an ad hominem attack. Like, I fucking hated it. It was so shitty.
Chris, any bad movies lately?
Red Wings, I think it was called.
Oh, I saw the previews for that. It looked terrible.
It was really bad.
I thought it looked good. Red Wings, that's the one with, like,
the black fighter pilots in World War II.
That movie sucked?
Yeah, it was really bad.
Come on.
The storytelling wasn't coherent at all. Like, you never cared about... you cared about one of the characters for, like, 10 minutes, and then they killed him.
I watched Batman Forever. That movie sucked. Wait, no. Batman... Which one's the one with Mr. Freeze? And it's Arnold.
Wasn't that Batman and Robin?
Me in the cooler.
Batman and Robin, I think.
Okay, I watched Batman and Robin. That movie fucking
sucked. All the Batman movies before The Dark Knight were bad, so it doesn't
matter. The Tim Burton ones were kind of endearing.
Yeah, but they were still campy.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just a totally different aesthetic. Like,
fuck Burton.
The Batman of, like, the 60s TV show is just so worlds different from the Batman of, say, Dark Knight or Arkham City or anything.
Fair enough. I love Tim Burton. Nightmare Before Christmas is my favorite movie ever because I am secretly a 15-year-old emo kid, just in case anyone didn't know.
Secretly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I am coming out today as a 16-year-old emo child.
Just today?
Okay, whatever. I came out a while ago. It's okay.
we're out of the closet here with you. I mean, we've come to terms with this already. So yeah, no bombshells there. Anyway,
thank you for accepting me for me.
I do accept you. So the bad movie that I saw was One for the Money, based on the Ivanovich book. My God, was that movie? It was an action comedy that.
Who's in that again?
I forget her name. Some woman who can't really act. But it was the standard action comedy where the action makes no sense and the jokes are about a woman being naked or something. And one of the things that came away really bothering me was that there was only one non-white character in the movie that was not either evil or a prostitute.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, it was Katherine Heigl.
Yeah.
I was going to guess Katherine Heigl as a joke, and then I wanted to see it. Like, I just looked it up just now.
So, as just one example, this is the kind of action comedy where someone is handed a 5-shot weapon and shoots someone in the chest 7 times.
I love those. They're so hysterical.
Yeah, movies are the best.
It's a very one-liner-centric, smirky kind of... movie, and you know, I came in assuming that it would be like catered toward a woman audience, but every shot of Katherine Heigl was very male gazy, like multiple times.
Did you have to see this because it's PG-13 and you were with your girlfriend?
No, she really liked the books, so she dragged me to it. Yeah, it was painful.
Shots. Yeah. That definitely gets shots.
He brought it up.
I mean, good luck in Twilight Part 2. That's all I can say.
I doubt that she'll be dragging me to that because we broke up.
Ooh.
Really? I like this. Really? I like this. I like
I'm
you.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of movies I didn't like, I saw Watchmen last week.
I loved that movie. I thought it was really good. I loved the sex scene, and I loved everything. I thought it was awesome. I loved the sex scene. I loved the blue dong. Yeah, I loved that movie. I thought that movie was great.
Warsock is my favorite superhero of all time, unsurprisingly.
By the way, my new noise rock band is named The Blue Dong.
Nice.
Congratulations on that. But anyway, the movie wasn't anywhere near as good as the graphic novel. The storytelling was super convoluted.
See, I hated the graphic novel because of those like little breaks in between the chapters.
What?
You know what I'm talking about? Like,
no.
The Midnight Freighter or whatever the fuck that thing was called. Like, the little breaks, the little chapter breaks. I hated reading those because they took forever, and I just wanted to fucking read about Rorschach burning people in prison and shit.
That guy was... he's my favorite superhero of all time.
Well, he's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all felt like that in our lives before. If you haven't, then you're fucking worthless.
I mean, I think he's like, he's my my least favorite superhero of all time is the Green Lantern, whatever his name is.
Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, I hate him. But because he's like everything that I'm not, so I don't like him. And Rorschach's nice because he's crazy and delusional and all that stuff.
Rorschach is like Charlie Kelly from It's Always Sunny.
I've never seen that show.
Oh, no. Jesse?
I've seen it a couple times.
Okay, well, like, watch a few episodes of It's Always Sunny. I mean, Rorschach is basically Charlie Kelly, only Charlie's, like, funny, and Rorschach is wanting to kill people all the time.
Rorschach is awesome.
Man, what other shitty movie did I see?
This is some really high-level discussion here.
Battlefield Earth. Either of you guys seen Battlefield Earth?
Oh, come on. That's...
like a million years ago.
Yeah, a movie.
When we're talking about bad movies, you can't just go to the worst movie ever made. I mean, how are we going to top that?
You already said that about The Room.
I know, but you're cheating.
Yeah, you can't go back 10 years and go to a random Tom
Cruise. I mean, like,
and go to
these are movies
Tom
that
Cruise
if you
movie.
Look up on Wikipedia for list of really bad movies, they'll come up.
One sec, let's check.
List of movies...
List of films considered the worst.
Yeah, and I bet you that they're both on there.
List of films considered the worst. That is how you would
Battlefield
write that
Earth,
sentence out.
Freddy Got Fingered, The Room, from Justin to Kelly.
Oh, from Justin
Giggly,
to Kelly.
Catwoman, Alone in the Dark, Birdemic Shock and Terror, Showgirls, Howard and the Duck.
Howard the Duck is the George Lucas one. I saw that when I was like 7. List of Magic Writers considered
punch?
The worst.
Oh,
Jonathan
I watched
Medina.
Old Dogs. That's kind of going back 10 years though, because that's in like 2003. Did either of you guys see Old Dogs?
No.
Oh man, it's the shit. How about Sucker Punch, Chris?
No.
Wait, no. Did I see Sucker?
What kind of 16-year-old emo kid doesn't see fucking Sucker Punch?
I mean, I might have been in my non-16-year-old emo kid phase.
Wait. Which one was Sucker Punch? It sounds really
Sucker
familiar.
Sucker Punch was the one where...
was that the one about the little kid hero?
No. It was where, like, a bunch of girls were in an insane asylum.
Oh.
It was
that
a Zack
one,
Snyder
that one, that
movie.
One. No, I didn't see that.
Yeah,
I did.
It sounds bad.
Oh.
It sounds good.
It's like Inception for really dumb people. I don't... I can't, like, talk about it any more than that, but, like, yeah, it's Zack Snyder's follow-up to Watchmen, I think, and it's really bad. Like, if you don't give him decent source material, he's just gonna fucking write a stinker.
I mean, I don't think Watchmen was very good, but whatever.
I want to see Sucker Punch just because I saw someone's interpretation of it as being about how nerd culture is sexist.
That's what it's supposed to be like, but it's not that at all. It's nerds culture is sexist written by someone who is sexist. I don't even know.
Yeah, because the trailers made it seem like
really well designed, but really objectifying.
Well, yeah, it is really objectifying. All they do is wear like sexy clothing, and like there are layers to the world that they're in. Like,
isn't that how we want our movies, objectifying?
No.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Objectifying in a cool way, not in a girls are objects way. That's not cool, Chris.
I think that we just need to stop objectifying Chris Mascioli.
I mean, I don't think anyone objectifies me. So
oh, I do.
Good. Oh, really?
Really?
Are you sure?
Pretty sure.
Did you happen to find any of the other cards you were looking for? Oh, let's play that hypothetical game.
Oh yeah, let's play the game.
That's a good game.
Yeah, this will be the closing notes.
Sure.
I'm gonna list some cards, and you guys are gonna guess how much they're gonna cost on site. Sort of War and Peace.
I'm gonna steal what's his name's idea and go with 70 apiece.
Under.
Well, say how much under. I'm saying 50.
Drew Levin said 60. Who was it that said 60. 70? I forget.
Sam Stoddard.
Yeah, I'm going with Sam Stoddard.
I don't know anything about prices because I don't read those articles except when
it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't Ratchet matter. Pump. Like 70 is not pump. Realistic for Sword of War and Peace at all. Sword of War and Peace is like a $15 card, if that.
It's a $35 card, but whatever. Ratchet Bomb.
Ooh, 40.
Just remember, we are on an island.
Yeah. 20.
I say 25.
Yeah, 40 is a little high, but like
Stony Silence.
Stony Silence.
Which one is that?
It's Nolrod, except it costs one the white.
Oh, right.
Seven.
Damn it, I was going to say. Fine, 10.
15 for me.
Really? Why so?
Yeah.
You think people are going to catch on to Stony Silence?
Yeah. How about Sorin?
Sorin.
Isn't that 60 on the mainland?
It's currently 50 on Star City.
Ooh. Oh, that's
75.
Like 110.
I think it's going to break 100.
Yeah.
One sec. Let me just. I named.
See, I don't think that it's going to be like a Sorin that gets that high because people will bring theirs from home. It'll probably be like some obscure mythic that catches on at the last second.
There are none. Oh, Hero of Bladehold was the other one.
Oh my god. That'll be like 50.
Less than that. 30.
Yeah, I say around 25. That's what Drew said as well. Drew said 15 for Ratchet Bomb, 60 for Sword of War and Peace, and 5 for Stony Silence. Okay, on that note, we're done. So
more hypotheticals?
No, unless you want to say one.
Stranglegeist.
$2.
I think it'll be a solid 5 spot.
Foiled Japanese artist signed 1/5.
What about Garruk Primal Hunter?
30.
3.
40.
$3. Because no one will play it, because Chris Mascioli chose it
$3.
For basic fantasy.
Any more?
The uncommon.
Which one?
The token maker with flashback black.
Lingering Souls? Yeah. $2.
Yeah, that'll
really?
Be...
Really?
It's from the most recent set, and people have been drafting infinites.
I think it'll go up to 5.
I don't think that's going to get played as much as Stranglegeist.
It's $2 in real life, and people are going to have to find a lot of copies.
It's $2 in Star City real life.
Fair. But...
Yeah, Star City is not real life. Let's establish that right now.
Yeah.
For now and forever. Star City, not real life. If Michael Martin is writing for your site... Not real. It doesn't matter how many legitimate writers you have. You also got Michael Martin.
And not me, because...
Oh, my God, dude. I got fired from that site, too. Get over it.
Fair.
And I was never hired. Yay! Wait.
Yay!
That means you still have a chance.
I really doubt that.
No.
All right.
He has something called the Twitter account, so yeah, he has no chance.
So, you also co-wrote that blog with me, so you're fucked.
True.
Anyway, with that, this has been Chris Mascioli at Die Please Thanks on Twitter, DiePlsTKS, here with John Capora.
At Feb31st on Twitter, at FEB31ST.
And Jesse Mason.
Kill Goldfish, like it sounds.
CILGE Goldfish.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye.